91.9 FM, 103.1 FM, WNRN, Charlottesville, Richmond. We're here in the studio at Sound of Music Recording Studios with Brandi Carlile. Thank you very much, Brandi, for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Very, very excited. Of course, your latest album, Give Up the Ghost, on Columbia Records, was released last October. As a radio guy who started playing your material 5 years ago when your first album was released, I felt really ignorant when I first heard you. My coworker played What Can I Say For Me, and I heard this voice. I heard this passion, and I thought, how do I not know who Brandi Carlile is? She must be some heritage act that must be in her mid-50s and has this voice. And then I found out, wait, she's only in her early 20s? No, that can't be true, because you have this big raspiness. Needless to say, all of us in radio and beyond were just so impressed by you. How did you take that early fame that just grabbed onto you so quickly?
Just as a huge compliment. I mean, a lot of the early radio stuff, when we first put out Brandi Carlile, all the places like WNRN were so welcoming and warm, and it was so nice to be able to go in and sing and have people really care about what you're doing. It meant a lot to me, and it was sort of contradictory of everything I'd ever heard about radio.
Well, what had you heard? Because a lot of people, like, from the inside, you know, we understand that, you know, sometimes artists are just like, radio, they're just not going to pick up on anything unless there's cash behind it, whatever. But what were your expectations going into it?
Well, I'd never heard anything about, you know, radio's not going to pick up on anything if there wasn't cash behind it. But I always just thought that it was for more established artists, and that there were places that played new artists, but not very much, not enough to gain traction and things like that. And just that it was a really tough, a tough industry that was sort of becoming corporate.
Yes.
And then when my first record came out, I really sort of felt some of that old school radio stuff that I had always wanted to feel, you know, showing up at the radio station with a pizza and then sitting around and playing for everybody. It was like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Made me happy.
Well, actually, you came into it just the right time, because it was very, very corporate just prior.
Really?
To that time, you know, and then the corporate mold, thankfully, started to break down, and more independent radio stations have come into the mold. And we can do this, you know, even like today, we can do this with artists. And it's just, you know, the way it was meant to be.
Isn't that how it works, though? Don't things just sort of explode and then implode? And I mean, it works that way in the music industry, too. I mean, as soon as the major label, you know, super business savvy mold starts to get so big and so successful that you think it can hardly contain itself, it simply doesn't.
Right.
And then we go back to the indie design again, and then the indie design becomes successful, and the indie labels become majors, and sort of the whole cycle just repeats itself over and over again.
Well, it's kind of what you did. I mean,
it's cool.
The first album, you know, it was you and the twins, you know, just having fun, and you made this incredible debut release. The second album, you decided to hire this upstart producer named T-Bone Burnett.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's
just a good old boy. We didn't know anything about him. Funny name, but we were like, let's just do this. No, I'm kidding.
So going in as a young woman in the recording studio for your sophomore album, not, you know, T-Bone going back to revisit some artists like his stuff with Robert Plant, Alison Krauss, but this is your second release. Going into the studio with T-Bone, did you feel any pressure? You're like, you know, I'm an artist, I have to stand up for my own creed, or did you just take cue from him?
Well, first of all, I mean, the first time I ever got together and had drinks with T-Bone was just sort of by happenstance in New York City. We ended up being in the same city and getting together and starting to talk about country music. And it turns out that if you want to work with an A-list producer to make your record, all you got to tell them is that you don't want a producer. And so we were sitting around having drinks talking about live music, and I was like, we just don't want a producer, man. We just want to set up in the room and record live. And he's kind of like, when are you making your record?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, the concept of wanting to record live, wanting to record more songs than could ever fit on a record, and sort of this throwback to classic country and western bluegrass Appalachian music that influenced me, I think was enough of a challenge for him to want to work with us, even at this tiny, minuscule level that we were at. I think we had just finished playing Joe's Pub or one of those places that night. And it worked out to be the best thing, because even not wanting a producer, even wanting to branch out on our own and do our own thing and figure out how to record ourselves, I still learned more by watching T-Bone in the studio than I could have learned making 15 records on my own.
You mentioned how you grew up listening to like a lot of Appalachian music. Now, being from the Northwest, how did that get into your, you know, atmosphere? How did that get into your youth?
Through my grandparents and my great-grandparents. The old folks in our family tend to live a long time. And they come from all over the country. Mm-hmm. And on my dad's side, my great-grandfather, Carlisle, was a dobro player.
Right. Oh,
and
wow.
He and his wife just followed the bluegrass festivals around, I mean, their entire lives. And until she died about a year ago, incidentally. Great-grandmother, that's a long time to live. And then on my mother's side, my great-grandmother was a honky-tonk piano player, and then all of her kids were in a band with her. So her sons played dobro, banjo, guitar, they were yodelers. That got passed down to my mother, and then my mother passed that down to me and my siblings. That's where it all came from, was our grandparents.
That's amazing. I mean, so often you hear stories, you know, that, you know, I learned it from just because I wanted to pick up, you know, guys say I wanted to go get a girl, or, you know, women say I just wanted to do this or that. The family tradition is eroding away in America. Mm. And you got, how old were you when they first put an instrument in your hands?
Well, it wasn't so much about an instrument as much as it was about singing, you mm-hmm. know. They kind of let you find your own thing. Mm-hmm. And I decided really early on, maybe 5, 6 years old, that my instrument was going to be my voice.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom's dad, his instrument was his voice, too. He didn't really play anything. And then they sort of, they put the instruments in my brother's hands. He played piano, he played the spoons, harmonica. And then the first time I ever sang on stage in front of people in an official show was when I was 8 years old. So that really was a thick, thick tradition and calling in our family, for sure, music.
Your voice, as I've said before, is an incredible instrument.
Thanks.
It gets really big, and then you do these subtle nuances, and you play with a word. You just don't sing a word. You have a way of playing with a word to put on, if it's just a little bit of sass.
Oh, man, thanks for saying that. You're right.
Were you trained, like, did you get vocal training when you were in school, or did this something that you all developed on your own?
I didn't have any vocal training at all. Sometimes I think I need it, you know, when I feel like I've been too hard on my voice for a couple of years, and I'll be like, wow, I got to relearn how to do a couple of things, because you'll injure yourself, and then you'll do all these things to compensate for your injury. Uh-huh. It's kind of like an athlete playing on a sprained ankle or something, you know. All of a sudden, you put too much pressure on your other knee, and then you've got a knee injury too, you know. So that's kind of the way that it worked with my voice for a couple of years. And so I've thought at times I need training, but I've never had any official training.
At this point, don't do it.
All right, I won't. Just because you said so.
Yeah. Did anyone else give you Yeah, you just say, yeah, I gave you said so.
Yeah.
But because you've got it and you've found your voice being your voice, mm-hmm. why screw with it?
Yeah, it's better off just to take a couple days off and go to sleep.
Touched, I saw heaven in your eyes, and jewel-studded clouds floating in your skies, seas of blue and fields of green, looking like you fell out of someone's dreams. Why do my troubles turn true whenever I rest my eyes on you? Why must my heartache be found wherever your feet are touching the ground? You could sing an army of angels to sleep with songs that could cause all the devil to weep. You hold me so sweet when the day is done, enough to make you wonder where we all came from. Why do my troubles turn true whenever I rest my eyes on you? Why must my heartache be found wherever or touching the ground? A heartache can be found wherever your feet are touching the ground. Ooh. And now those eyes are filling with rain, bringing me misery and giving me pain. Curse sea shackles that she put on me. And blessed be the day when you set me free. Why do my troubles turn true whenever I rest my eyes on you? Why must my heartache be found wherever your feet are touching the ground? Heartache can be found wherever your feet are touching the ground. Heartache can be found wherever your feet are touching the ground.
And Richmond's 103.1 WNRN. We are live at the Sound of Music Recording Studios with Brandi Carlile. That's her song, Touching the Ground, featuring Tim and Phil Hanseroff helping out Brandi on the track. And we're very fortunate to be talking with Brandi Carlile this morning.
Of course, with T-Bone, of course, the album you produced was The Story.
Yeah.
The Story, the title track, became so big. Known now worldwide, got used in commercials, by television, by the Olympic Games in Beijing. As an artist, how do you feel about your art being not just necessarily manipulated, but used by other artisans for their craft?
I think it's a really special opportunity for songwriters like me. And it's not in a business sense at all. I mean, as a business person, I can see why it'd be beneficial. But as a songwriter, the sentiment to me is more important because of the fact that when music programmers for television and movies are listening to your songs, as opposed to, suppose, a radio program director, no offense to radio program directors, is that so much thought goes into your song and the structure of it. I mean, how do the lyrics work with what I'm trying to program here? What is the tempo like? How does this song emote? What's the instrumentation like? How does it flow into this scene with the song before and after it? And somebody taking that much of your song into consideration, it means a lot as a songwriter, because really the only other people thinking about your songs in that at that level, that in that with that depth, are you and your fans.
Yeah.
And to hear a programmer of any kind do that with your music, it means a lot. It's a special opportunity to give artists that aren't mainstream attention. And it helps us and it helps the industry, and it's a really good thing.
You can definitely tell that when your music is used by other means, it's not in the sense that you're trying to make the buck.
No, there is no buck.
Yeah.
Just, but, you know.
but now because of, you know, drop sales and albums, you know, people only making their money on the road, so many musicians these days are turning their attention toward, you know, well, all right, my song gets picked up by a commercial, it's okay. You know,
right.
But what's your stance on it as the artist, you know, about if, you know, someone approached you and said, you know, I really want last year for this car commercial for a used car, you know?
Oh, then I would say no.
Okay.
I mean, so for every one thing that, you know, we approve, there are 10 things that we don't.
Okay.
So, I mean, for instance, the GM commercial that was for the Olympics, that commercial meant so much to me. It started something in my life that's completely invaluable. First of all, I got to tell you how this all panned out. They asked us to have the story for the GM commercial.
Right.
And the record had been out for a year. The story had already done well. Mm-hmm. We didn't really need anything from it. And I didn't want to be aligned with an American car company because I felt like environmentally it went against a lot of the things I believed in.
Sure.
So we said no. We politely declined. And then GM came back to us. The head of marketing called me and he said, well, what if we let you be involved in the commercial and you sort of shape this thing to sort of deliver the message that we're all trying to send here, which is that we need a new plan. And I had to go home and think long and hard about that because I'm a proponent of American jobs and because a car company can rethink their standards. They can rethink that.
Sure.
They can create hybrid cars. I mean, GM already did really well with the Volt and then it disappeared that we all know about. So what we did was we made the commercial all about environmentally sustainable cars. They let me help write the text.
Yeah.
And they changed all the cars out in the commercial to be hybrids, electric cars, fuel cell, hydrogen engines. And they made the commercial about tomorrow. And then what we did was we took all the money that came from that commercial, which is the most we've ever gotten paid for anything in our careers. We took every single dime of it, and we donated it to grassroots environmental organizations, every penny.
Oh, my goodness.
And we were able to start our foundation, the Looking Out Foundation, which is an overall outreach foundation. It's not environmental.
See, now that's one something about that, you know, that's not a well-publicized fact. You know,
right.
People may know that, okay, this story was used on a car commercial.
Yeah.
They probably don't know what you did with the endeavor. I mean, is that something you consciously chose to do? Like, oh, nah, well, you know.
Well, you don't do it for attention, you know.
No.
You swear no oath on the man.
Good.
Let your yes be your yes. Let your no be your no.
All right, well, fast forward from the story, of course, to now giving up the ghost. Obviously, this upstart T-Bone Burnett fellow wasn't enough, so you got another dude no one's ever heard of, Rick Rubin, to produce your record.
Yeah.
Where did this... Who,
young guy out of...
L.A. Who made the call first to Rick?
We didn't make any calls to Rick. We, you know, we met Rick Rubin before we ever got a record deal.
No way.
And he sort of mentored us through Brandi Carlile, through the first record, just as a friend, and helped us with a lot of things. And then we ended up not signing to his record label and going to Columbia, and then here we are years later.
Yeah.
He's an executive, you know? He's the president of A&R or something like that.
Yeah.
Those titles are so elusive. At Columbia, and we ended up working with him, but I would say that it was kind of stressful. It was a conflict of interest because he's on one hand a wonderful producer, and
yeah.
you want to be aligned with him as an artist, and you want to be able to collaborate. You want to be able to be musically vulnerable to someone like that in the studio. But at the same time, it's really hard to make the distinction between which hat is on.
Yeah.
The executive hat or the artist hat.
Did you find that struggle, like saying, man, is he really just trying to turn this into
yeah.
mega hit?
So why do you want that chorus to pop,
yeah.
as you say? No, yeah, there were a lot of times. I worried about that all the time. I mean, it's a classic battle between art versus commerce. Cool. There we go. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, and dreams. I have dreams. I'm awake when I'm asleep. Are you are in my dreams. You're underneath my skin. How am I so weak? And now, in my dreams, I can feel the weight. I could just come. Keep it to myself. I know what it means. I can't have you. Bad dreams. How long can you hold your breath? Can you count to 10? Can you let it pass? Oh, 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 oh. Keep it in and keep it behind lashes. Well, can you make it last? And now, in my dreams, I can feel the way. I could just come clean. I keep it to me. Can you read my mind? Has it come undone? Am I showing signs? And now, in my dreams, I can feel the way. I could just come clean. I can't.
keep it to myself.
WNRN, live in studio at Sound of Music Recording Studios with Brandi Carlile.
On this new record, you got a lot of people besides the twins on the album. And who decided to bring Chad Smith? Obviously, he and Rick go back a long time with the Chili Peppers. But
Rick did, but he's not really very pushy about those kinds of things. He was just like, hey guys, here's Chad Smith's address. Why don't you go over and jam with him, you know? So we sort of drove to Chad Smith's house and, you know, went out and sat in his backyard and jammed with him and fell in love with his drumming.
Yeah.
It's not like with the Chili Peppers. I mean, he threw like towels over his drums and played with brushes, and he was really musical and fun.
He's one of those guys that, you know, not a knock against the Chili Peppers. But
no,
it's like,
not at all.
It's one of those things that you think of him in one role, and that's all you think of. And
yeah,
then you
right.
listen to some of the other stuff he's been on. It's like, wait, he can do what?
I know. That's what we thought. I mean, Phil's been a Chili Peppers fan since he was like in junior high school. So he was so nervous because he's the bass player, and he's like, oh, I'm going to play with Chad Smith, and I'm so not Flea. You know? And so it was like we had heard so much of his drumming with the Chili Peppers, and we were like, huh, well, that's like super tight rock and roll drumming, and we don't want that on our record. We want like loose, flowy, tasty stuff. And then the way he was totally perfect for the music. In fact, what we ended up doing was we had like two drummers on the record. We had Chad Smith, who is the super tight rock and roll, you know, drummer. And then we had this like really tasteful, brushy, musical guy named Victor Andrizzo.
Uh-huh.
And we reversed their roles. We had Victor play the caveman rock.
Oh.
And we had Chad Smith play the brushes and the snare, you know what I mean? And like, for instance, the song That Year,
yeah.
He played drums on that in the same room with me, just like you and I are right now, guitar and drums.
A friend of mine wanted to ask you, he was the radio guy that first put your first album in my ears, and he's so enamored by your stuff. He wanted me to ask you, what was the inspiration for that song That Year? He wants to know the story behind it.
Oh, well, it's about a friend that I lost to suicide when I was 16.
Oh.
And he was 16 too. And, shoot, you know, I was just really mad, just really angry with them and stuff. And I was really heavily involved in my church. And
yeah.
I was like super Baptist teenager, even though I was gay and I had short hair. There was a contradiction there, but I was ignoring it. And, you know, I just was so angry with them that I turned to that sort of. And I used that as my excuse to write him off and have him just be a villain in my life for the next 10 years. But I never thought about him or spoke about him. And then one night I had this dream that we were driving around in his car and blowing stop signs and drinking coffees at the coffee stand and getting sunburns in the summertime. And that we were just, I mean, it wasn't emotional. We were just friends again.
Yeah.
And I realized that my subconscious had sort of forced me to make peace with him, and that he actually didn't do anything to me at all.
It was him.
Yeah. So that's what that song's about.
I must have been sleeping, must have been drinking. I haven't been dreaming about you for years. It was a sharp turn and a sunburn. I was too cool for high school that year. Must have been New Year's, the one in five. You should have taken a long break instead of a long drop from a high place. 10 years I never spoke your name. Now it feels good to say forgave you. I said I hated you. He was the bigger man. I was 16. All the innocence it took for you to finally make your yearbook that year. Taken some time away instead of a long drop, instead of a leap of faith. 10 years I never spoke your name. Now it feels good to say that you're my friend again. You're my friend again.
WNRN, with the studio version of Brandi Carlile's song That Year, appearing on her latest album, Give Up the Ghost. We're speaking with Brandi Carlile live at the Sound of Music Recording Studios. Brandi, getting back to your voice.
You'll take a word, and you just issue out so much pain in a note, and it brings us all to tears, and we are along with you for whatever suffering you've been through or whatever story you're trying to convey. Hats off to you. That is not an easy trick. And it's almost an operatic style, you know, from the best opera singers in the world to a country pop singer as yourself, you know, that's a hard trick. And many people work their whole life to get that. And you have it at still being a very young woman, as a young woman. And you tell these stories of such emotion, such relationship pain. Is it hard sometimes to relive things that you've been through, or to just put on a image you have in your head when you sing?
You know, it's crazy. In the studio, I have a hard time because I know I have to sort of tap into that, relive those things. I have to really understand the lyrics, listen to them, try and get in the place where I can draw some energy from something.
Yeah.
Because live, it comes really easy to me. Everybody's listening, everybody's hanging on the words, and there's all this energy being hurled towards you. And you can take it, and you can feel it, and you can thrive off of that. But in the studio like this, I mean, just like in a room like this,
yeah.
it's just me,
right.
You know, and a guitar, and I can kind of see the twins.
Yeah.
But it's not like it is live, and I don't honestly know where it comes from or how I get it.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time getting it in the studio. I have to do all kinds of things, like wake up real early in the morning and not drink any coffee, or just do something, you know, so that I can find a way to gather emotion, because I think my whole life is based on gathering emotion from the live audience.
That's an interesting technique. You know, like before we came into the studio today, you were, you know, just craving that cup of Joe. And
yeah.
The fact that you're now saying that, you know, I will make myself suffer that addiction that I need. You know, I'm an office coffee addict. You know, I need that cup.
You're totally right, man. That's an understatement.
Yeah, just to give that frustration to put that voice out there.
Totally.
Before we get to going, I want to ask one question, or two more, then we'll stop. First off, being in Northwest, you are a fisherman.
Yeah.
Do you bait or fly?
Bait.
Okay. And also, you got to work with one of our both idols on your last record. How'd you get to work with Elton?
With Elton John?
Yeah.
Is he one of your idols?
Of, how could he not be? Come
on. Do you just love him? I love him so much.
I got to see him 2 years ago. I mean, it was amazing.
Really? Did you meet him?
No, of course not.
Kind soul. I sent him an email and he called me.
What?
He's just a really nice person. I mean, I sent him an email that he called a fax.
Yeah.
And then he called me back the next morning before I was awake and said that he would sing with me and play on my song. And, I mean, of course there was some, I'm sure there was some preliminary.
Yeah.
Management reaches out to management's lawyers, friends, yeah. accountants, cousins, dog, and then it gets through to, you know, somebody else's manager. And anyway, so there was some of that that happened before I sent the facts, as it were.
But that's your fringe benefit. That's something you get to enjoy. So
yes.
Don't worry about that part.
True. Yeah. And I was able to just communicate with Elton one-on-one, like a couple of friends deciding to go play tennis or something.
Oh.
It was really fun.
That is incredible. Well, it's been a pleasure for me to talk with you this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure. You're a great interviewer.
Oh, shut up.
Really great.
Yeah, stop. Brandi Carlile here. Thank you very much to Sound of Music Studios. Alan for working the board for a while. And Miguel, thank you all so very much. And WNRN, thank you, Brandi.
Thank you, man.
I woke up long after dawn. 20 years it come and gone. I'm the wind it chased for me. A day in June you came to me. I've seen through someone else's eyes with nothing on the other side. Every motel, every town, pieces scattered all around. Promises that I can't be someone's heart that I can't keep. Days so long I couldn't speak. Roads so rocky I can't sleep. I've seen things so beautiful all around this broken world that pale in comparison to you. Caroline, I'm on my way back home to you. Imagine what I would go through without you by my side. It's been a long, long time. Won't you say a prayer for me? I hope you will remember me. You're always on my mind.
I've seen the canyon land. Crooked lines like in your hands. I swear the earth was split in two. I wouldn't lie, I promise you that I have seen it, you will too. You could not believe if not for photographs I took to you. Caroline, they've built towers to the sky. It hurts sometimes to watch them try. They run themselves into the ground. But I know you will love them and their city lights and city sound. There's beauty in the struggle. Anytime I feel it get me down, I see you smiling, Caroline.
I'm on my way back home to you. Can't imagine what I'm going through without you by my side. It's been a
long, long time.
Won't you say a prayer for me? I hope you will remember me. You're always on my mind, my Caroline. Still there.